Hi, and welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballinger. Good to have you here with us. Get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballinger. Get a hold of Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. We're available on your Amazon Fire and Roku TVs, submitting to Apple TV very soon. And you can find all of our work at golfnewsnet.com. Be sure to check out our new revamp GNM Plus. We are putting some big muscle behind it finally. It's time to do it. And we are changing things a little bit with the new homepage. It should come out in the next couple of days, hopefully by the weekend. And also offering more day-to-day content with GNM Plus. The thing that I've kind of realized, full disclosure, last year I kind of thought about selling an investment stake or a portion of the site to an investor. And one of the things that came out of it that was really interesting was that I had always kind of tried to position Golf News Net, not this show, obviously I'm involved with the show, but tried to position Golf News Net as being unimportant with me involved, you know, me not being important to its existence, that it would have a sizable audience regardless of whether or not it was my byline or someone else's or anybody else's for that matter, because it would make it a little bit more palatable, in my view, to sell it to somebody someday if it didn't matter that I was there. And one of the things that came out of the whole discovery process was that, well, I kind of do matter. Not entirely, of course, but I do kind of matter to GNN. And so I should maybe work harder to make GNN or make some facet of GNN about myself. And so I came to the conclusion after some thinking, after doing some other projects this year, let's do it with GNN Plus. So we've been throwing around some ideas, how I want it to look. And the idea is going to be the new Golf News Net homepage and the new homepage portion of that for GNN Plus members will be kind of a timeline style. It'll be a window into what we're doing at Golf News Net. But for Golf News Net Plus members, that's going to mean you're getting an extra window into what I'm researching, thinking, doing, creating, all of it. And you're going to get additional content as a result of that on a daily basis. That's going to be in writing, it's going to be photography, it's going to be short thoughts and short bursts of research that you can just read and consume quickly. It's going to be what I'm looking at on social, all of the stuff in a timeline approach so that you can see the full breadth of what is going on in my messed up brain. And part of that's going to include exclusive editions of this show. I've thrown around the idea of doing a daily podcast, a 10 to 15 minute kind of headline driven podcast. We tried this idea called Two Off the First a few years ago, maybe it was even last year, I don't remember, but I think it was a couple of years ago, where I would hit on the top two stories of the day, like a 5 or 6 minute video, and those were nice, but they were kind of hard to keep up with, because making video is infinitely more time consuming than making audio, and I struggled with that. I like the idea of it, I like the idea of making podcasts every day, but if I'm just telling you stuff that you kind of already know, and I'm doing it kind of quickly, maybe you're not going to get as much out of it. So it could be a 20-minute show. It could be a 30-minute show that just delves into two topics. Well, that's basically this podcast is two topics, 30 minutes, and we move on with life usually. Sometimes it's one topic, but usually two. And so my thought was, okay, well, let's not do a daily podcast. Let's just do more editions of the 19th Hole Golf Show and make those available to people who want to listen to them. So we're going to make those available to GNN Plus members. And it'll have its own little feed, its own separate private feed. So regardless of what happens, whether you subscribe to GNN Plus or not, there will still be this show. There will still be a regular episode of the 19th Hole Golf Show. And then there will be GNN Plus only episodes of the 19th Hole Golf Show that we'll have on GNN Plus in its own separate feed. And that will cost either $5 a month or $50 for a year. And then we have a lifetime access option, which the price eludes me at this point, but I think it's something like $200 forever, something like that. And so that's all available at thegolfnewsnet.com/GNN-plus. It's all available in the navigation. You can check it out for yourself, but that's going to start to roll out pretty soon. So my goal with all of that is to kind of take the audience that I've built over time and try to offer content just to folks who are coming to GNN, who are coming to the stuff that I'm creating for me, not just because it's been created, and hopefully that'll all kind of work out, because one of the reasons that I would like to do this, and I've always kind of wanted to do this, but especially so in the last year, is because I've kind of gotten burned out by the notion of creating golf content, articles, podcasts, video, all kinds of things all the time. And not because I'm burnt out by the concept of doing that, but because I'm burnt out by the idea of what I'm making, whether that's stuff that's information-driven, whether that's research-driven, but it's more driven to a broad audience to increase the numbers of people who come check out our stuff, because it's a multiplicative problem. I mean, the more people you have, the more money you make, the more money you make, the more secure you are. And my thought had always been, once I had gotten to a point I had enough financial security doing this with a large enough audience, I could then kind of get back into doing the stuff I really wanted to do. And the stuff I really wanted to do, and the really want to do, is what's going to be in GNM Plus. So that's going to be over on its own, and it'll be an ad-free experience. It's a window into everything I'm doing, and hopefully that serves out pretty well. We'll still do stuff. We'll still do, again, the regular podcast here for every member or every listener, subscriber. It's going to be free forever, but the extra episodes will be for GNM Plus. We'll still do the TV channel. That'll make its money on advertising. Regular old GNN still going to exist. That'll make money off of advertising. But for a GNM Plus member, you're going to get content that those folks aren't going to see, and you're going to get an ad-free experience in doing it. So hopefully you'll check it out at thegolfnewsnet.com/GNN-plus. So we're a week away from the PGA Championship. We had a tremendous, tremendous story at the Wells Fargo Championship in Max Homa. And I have to admit, I have to have some sense of culpability that I was not ignorant to what Max Homa has gone through over the last couple of years, but I just haven't been as emotionally invested in it, perhaps, as other folks in the Twitter sphere in terms of, or Facebook, or I mean wherever his fan base is, but particularly on Twitter, because he's really active on it. And I mean, I'm aware of what he's gone through. I know in terms of cut performance, all of that stuff. I knew it wasn't very good. I knew he had gone back and forth as a really talented player, by the way, between the web.com and the PGA Tour, back and forth, back and forth, not making cuts on the PGA Tour, then going back to the web and figuring it out, getting back, and then screwing it up again. It was really interesting to watch him close out the golf tournament at Quail Hollow. He did it like somebody who had won 20 PGA Tour events. I mean, with Ricky Fowler, with Justin Rose, with Rory McIlroy, with Sergio Garcia, all of those guys kind of breathing down his neck. He never blinked. And he played with a very lucid strategy, very clear strategy to win the tournament, and then he executed it. And that's awesome. I mean, there are a lot of guys who have been in that position who have never won on the PGA Tour before, and they've gone back and forth between the web and there, or whatever, whatever profile person, but a younger person who's been in that spot and has absolutely choked. And they shot 77 or 78, 75, whatever, and they're not even close at the end. And, you know, on the 18th hole, it's Nance or Hicks or whoever it says, oh, well, they'll learn from this and they'll come back. And sometimes they do, and a lot of times they don't. And Max Homa did not do that. He played brilliant golf. I mean, he opened up a four-shot lead just before the weather delay on the 14th hole. He played his bad shots strategically to minimize the damage. He played the important shots well to maximize the benefit. He just did everything right and then capped it off on 18 beautifully. That the final putt with just the fist pump and the roar. And I know probably not a ton of people in the Charlotte area or frankly watching on TV kind of understood what that meant to Max Homa. And there are some people who have followed him religiously for years now, in part because of his relationship with No Laying Up, in part because he's just been so transparent on his own social channels about his struggles. And I thought it was really compelling, and you should listen to the No Laying Up podcast with Max. I think it's episode 170, if I remember right. And the NLU guys posted this clip from that podcast on Sunday, and it's obviously made the rounds since. So you may have heard this, but I thought it was really interesting how he decided, you know what, I have to rededicate myself to this. I need to get better every day. I can't waste a minute. I need to do everything that I can to make this happen. And today is going to be the day. Today is going to be the day it breaks. And he kept digging and digging. And as he said, I thought I got to the lowest point. I kept on digging a deeper hole for myself. And eventually I got out. And this is the culmination of that. Him winning on the PGA Tour. He gets to go to the Masters. He's in the PGA Championship. He's not in the U.S. Open or the British Open because of those wins, but it does give him much better status to earn a way into those tournaments. The U.S. Open, I think he's just going to have to try to sectional qualify. But he's got a great schedule now. He's got job security for the next two seasons after this one. He gets into invitational events. He is nearly in the top 100 in the world. He went from something like 1,200 and something not that long ago. Literally 35 weeks ago, he was mired in the mid-thousands, and it just looked like a guy who was just going to flame out. And he did something really interesting to get into the web.com, to get his web.com tour playoffs card. And he did it to get back to the PGA Tour by making four straight birdies to close out on the final event of the regular season on the web, the Portland Open. And that was enough. That's what saved him. That's what got him to where he needed to be to keep, to earn that card back. And he played in the final event of the web.com tour playoffs, the web.com tour championship in Florida. He missed the cut, but he stuck around. Some guys who miss the cut in that event, they just don't stay for the ceremony. They just get their card in the mail and we'll see you later. He stayed around because it meant that much to him to have clawed it back. And he said, I believe to Brently Romine, now from Golf Channel at the time, I believe Golf Week, said, I don't plan on going back to the web.com tour. And now he doesn't have to plan on that for 2+ years. It's really cool. I love stories like this because for so often, I mean, we talk in golf about the guys who make it look kind of easy, and it's not. It's really hard. There's a lot of work that goes into being 150th on the FedEx Cup points list, and there's a lot of work that goes into being number one, and everybody in between. And everyone has their own struggles. They have their own doubts. And it seems easier to write those off because of the guys that win. But I thought Justin Thomas put it really well, responding to, I don't forget what tweet or whatever, but he said, even the guy like him who's won a major, who's in the top five in the world, has the same doubts, has the same preoccupation with failure that Max Homa had. And Rory McIlroy has talked about that this year. When he won the Players Championship, he said, I believe it was on the 15th hole in the final round, he had to convince himself that he deserved to win. Deserved to win. He's Rory McIlroy. He's got four major championships. Of course he deserves to win. But I think that's a super fascinating window into the mind of a professional golfer. And I'm sure not every golfer is that way. I'm sure there are guys on the opposite end of the spectrum who think they deserve to win every damn time, and they're shocked that they don't. But I think the more prevailing, pervasive sense is one of self-doubt when it comes time to win. Can you do it? Well, you fall on your face a lot in golf. Even the most prolific winners, Tiger Woods being the noted exception, Phil Mickelson perhaps as well. But you have a great career on the PGA Tour if you win 10% of the time. You have a very successful PGA Tour career if you win 1 to 2% of the time. And you can make a really fine living for yourself if you win 0.1% of the time. So winning is really difficult. You have to accept and embrace a lot of failure in golf. And I'm sure we all know that. This is the reality of playing the game. But we don't talk about that very frequently when it comes to professional golfers, because there are so many that make $1 million plus a year. Yeah, there are taxes and other fees and stuff, and there's a lifestyle that you have to lead, traveling all these places and staying, and that's a type of thing. I got that. But we view these guys as so successful, and that they're the best golfers in the world, so why would they carry any doubt about their capability to close? But the truth is that, again, for the overwhelming percentage of golfers, professional golfers, if you were to tell them you could win 0.5% of the time in your career, would you take that? A lot of them would probably say, hell yeah, I'm going to be very comfortable, I'm going to make plenty of money, I can retire nicely, I'll rack up cuts, I'll get a nice little pension from the PGA Tour every month for all those cuts. It's going to be awesome. And that has not been Max Homa's experience, even to that. He's basically missed 2/3 of his cuts on the PGA Tour until he won. And so he made enough money from some of those rare high finishes that he could absorb this kind of period where he could make it, he could live frugally, he could get around, he could do what he needed to do and live comfortably enough to try to make his dream work. And it does now. And I think that's an absolutely great story. I think it's probably more so because he's opened up about it, because he's told people about it, but it's absolutely super. And I also want to extend that same thing to Joel Damon, who's overcome a lot in the last year. I mean, just about a year ago, about 10 months ago, he stuck his neck out and basically called Sung Kang a cheater on the PGA Tour for the way he took a drop at the Quicken Loans National. He's overcome cancer, lack of sponsors, lack of starts, lack of status. And he keeps putting himself in this position as like a first-round leader, a contender. He's gotten really close now to winning. I think the day is going to come soon this year when he figures out how to win. I think that will also be a really popular win. A guy who, again, really good friends with Max Homa also, has put in the work and has put himself through the ringer to do this and do it right. And I hope that day comes for him, Joel Damon as well. So I love the. I know this wasn't the biggest field ever. It wasn't the best field ever for this tournament. It used to be a little bit better field. I think the new schedule has thrown off a lot of tournaments, this being one, because this used to be the lead-in to the Players. It was a great, just a great field, because you could play back-to-back. Charlotte and Ponte Vedra weren't that far apart. You were playing for a lot of money. It just made sense. You're leading into kind of a major, but not quite. A lot of guys like to make this their stop. Now that it's on the path to the PGA Championship, it's a little bit different. So guys have to decide when they're going to play, when they're not. And I think that may help this week's Byron Nelson a little bit in the next few years with that reasoning. But it seems like this tournament has fallen off a little bit in recent memory, particularly as it's become a major championship venue. It just seems like the top players are kind of saying, well, this is just a really hard golf course, so maybe I'm not going to be as likely to play in it. So we'll see what happens with it. But still, regardless, this is a really great story, and hopefully more people will be now aware of what Max is capable of and be invested in him as a fan of his. It was a great weekend. Let's take a quick break here. I want to tell you about my friends at ShotScope. I have been using ShotScope throughout the season now. And actually, we're going to put out a little piece on them pretty soon over at golfnewsnet.com. But we've been working with them, and I've been working with the ShotScope platform to track my game this year. Because I've kind of reached this point where in my golf life, I'm not getting better and I'm not getting worse. I'm just kind of there. I'm right now, I think, a 2.6 or a 2.7 index, which I'm very, very happy with. But if you're just kind of the same guy playing the same golf all the time, it gets kind of dull. And so what I'm trying to do with ShotScope this year is to figure out where I'm going wrong and what I can be doing to get better. I've had this theory I'm a bad wedge player. I'm a good putter. I drive it pretty far. Not always straight, but I'm a good driver of the golf ball generally. Gain strokes that way. Not the best short iron player. So that's all my theory going into it, as I'm kind of compiling this data, and we're going to start going through it all now that we have enough rounds to make it statistically viable. And go through and say, okay, well, ShotScope has collected data on every shot that I've had through these rounds this year. What will it tell me based on what it tracks? And it uses the GPS in the wristwatch that you have, that you wear when you use the unit, when you use the platform. And you don't have to use an app while you're playing. You don't have to tap anything while you're playing. It just tracks. It also doubles as a GPS watch if you want, which is pretty handy. And then uses that to connect to Bluetooth and shares the results as it syncs up with your device. And then it tells you all these things like strokes gained, how far you usually hit your clubs, where you tend to leave your driver, how often you get up and down from certain yardages, all kinds of things. So we're going to break that down. And then I'll know, hey, these are the areas where I kind of am a skunk, and these are the areas where I'm pretty good, and they're fine for now. So that's what we're going to go through over the next few weeks. But anyway, you can follow my progress on golfnewsnet.com, but you can also find out about ShotScope for yourself. You go to shotscope.com, check out the platform. They're running some really good promotions to get the season started, get you using the platform. There's no annual platform fee, which is great. You buy it once, you're using it forever. There's no annual fee of $100. There's no extra equipment to get to use it the way that you want. It's just right there for you, and I love that about ShotScope. So check them out, ShotScope. Nelson.com. We are a week away from a major championship. We have the Nelson this week. We have the PGA Championship the following week. And I've kind of been thinking about, really for months now, here and there. I mean, not every waking second, of course, but here and there, about whether or not I like the idea of the PGA Championship in May. And I've come down to this conclusion. I do. I like it in May. I like it better than August. Sight unseen, regardless of how this plays out, I like it more in May. And I've been thinking about that because, I mean, for my entire life, the PGA Championship has been played in August. And so the major season has gone Masters in April, wait 2 months, U.S. Open, British Open in July, PGA Championship in August. Done. And now we're changing things. Now we're moving from the Masters in April to the PGA in May to the U.S. Open in June to the British Open in July. And then you have PGA Tour owned and operated events masquerading as majors in a quote-unquote season of championships on either end. You have the Players, which is a pseudo-major, very, very good. And you've got the FedEx Cup playoffs now all unfolding in August, so the PGA Tour season can end before Labor Day, even though it technically just begins again after Labor Day. It never really ends. But the FedEx Cup champion is crowned and gets their $15 million in August now. And I think it changes the major calendar for the better, because if you're the Masters winner, you have won in the smallest major field. You have won on the one major where they repeat the course every year. And you have won on a golf course that asks a really specific set of questions of golfers. When we went to the U.S. Open in June, you got asked a very different set of questions, almost the polar opposite set of questions. Could you handle heat? Could you handle humidity? Can you handle bumpy greens? Can you handle slow pace? Can you handle firm and fast conditions that sometimes get away from the USGA? Can you handle all that kind of stuff? A setup designed to penalize you. Now we're kind of easing a little bit. So we're going to a PGA Championship, which is the major that is most set up like a PGA Tour event, because the PGA of America tries to make this as fair, I guess is the right word, of a setup as possible. They want it to look like basically a country club style championship, but really hard and really fast. And they don't want the scoring to be near even. They want it to be like 10, 12, 14 under par to win. They want basically the guys who are playing the best to win a PGA Tour style event. When basically take the Memorial, that's the PGA Championship, but rotate it. And I think I like that. I think I like that as a terms of cadence, in terms of how the majors flow. Because then you get to the hardest major as the third one. The hardest major shouldn't be the last one, I don't think. The truly unique major is the last one. Because if you want to win the Grand Slam, obviously you have to win all four majors, right? And the PGA Championship going last really lacked an identity other than being, we're last. So if you want to win them all, you got to win this one. Or if you want to win a major this year, you've got to win this one. And now that changes. It goes, well, if you want to win the Grand Slam, yeah, you got to win us. We're second. But we're now the kickoff, really, to the golf season for most of the country. And they can do programming around that. They can talk about PGA of America professionals as really getting your year going with their 20 professionals in the championship. That's all really good. And it also kind of takes this position of being the lead-in to the golf season out of the Masters. So if it's most like the PGA Tour, well, we're about to jumpstart into some really good PGA Tour events too. I mean, we've got Wells Fargo last week. After this, we'll have Memorial. We'll have Colonial before that. We'll have a number of PGA Tour events like Travelers and the Canadian Open. And those will be good events too. We've got ones in the Midwest. So I think that's a good lead-in to that. And I think in the long run, obviously this is not immediate term, but in the long run, going to May opens up a different part of the country for the PGA Championship, which historically, again, in August, has been kind of relegated to the northern half of the United States. Now, if you look at the future venues of the PGA Championship, basically to 2030, because for some reason they decided them all already, they kind of have tipped toward the north. You've got Harding Park next year, which is still in Northern California, but It's still kind of above the midpoint of the United States, so to speak. And now, going into the future, especially with the PGA of America moving their headquarters to Frisco, Texas, they're going to play at least two PGAs there in the coming years. So you're going to start to see, I think, a movement towards some of the southern states where the population of the country is going, frankly. You can bring in a Florida PGA Championship in May. You can have one in Alabama in May. You can have one in Arizona in May. You can't really do that as effectively in August. Like, if you told people, hey, we're going to have the PGA Championship in August in Florida, people are like, so can we wear shorts or swim trunks or what? I mean, this is awful. And I think the last time that they tried to do this at Southern Hills, remember when Tiger won it, was 06 or 07? 07 when he won at Southern Hills. It was like 106 degrees and they were wearing pants and, oh, it's a dry heat. And that was an awful look. Awful. But if you play it in May and it's like 75 or 80, it's like, cool, this is great. This is exactly what we need. So not that I'm trying to regionalize the PGA Championship based on the date that it has, because the U.S. Open kind of regionalizes itself based on the date that it has in June, but I think that opens up some possibilities that weren't there before, and I think that's a good thing. And I think that the progression from the one that kind of everyone wants to watch to the one that no one really wants to play, the U.S. Open, because it's so hard, like you would dread playing it, to the one that's kind of in between the two, I think is the right play. I mean, the PGA Championship isn't easy. It's also not U.S. Open hard. It's exclusive because most of the courses are typically private. I mean, the next two aren't. This one and TPC Harding Park are available to the public, which is a good move. But a lot of them are private country clubs that are hard to get to. And so there's some exclusivity in that kind of carries over from Augusta National. I just think it's a proper flow from the Masters to the U.S. Open. And then I love that major season concludes with the British Open. I love that. I think it probably always should have concluded major season, because with the British Open ending things, if you're going to win the Grand Slam, which again has not happened in our lifetime in a single year, at least as it's constructed, and if you're going to go do that, if you're going to win a major at the end of the year, why don't you get your one and only at the truly unique major, the one that's played overseas, the one that's got the world feel, the one that just is different. It's the oldest one. I think that one either deserves to go first or last, and it should wrap things up. It's got a clear identity for so many reasons, and that makes it one that people want to watch regardless of when it is and what order it is, and so I think it works out a little bit better. Meanwhile, the PGA of America could not have asked for a better lead into its first May PGA Championship, with Tiger Woods winning the Masters. Obviously, I think he's right now an 11-2 betting favorite at Bethpage. It doesn't mean he's going to win, but 11-2 betting favorite. So there's a ton of interest, obviously, in the PGA Championship because of the Masters. And the PGA Championship should be able to capitalize that on moving forward, regardless of who wins the Masters in subsequent years. Tiger never wins another Masters, or if he wins five, doesn't matter. Whoever wins the Masters gets a big rub. This is the biggest golf television audience of the year. And so that means the PGA Championship can capitalize that on that 4 weeks, 5 weeks after, instead of having to wait months, and basically 2 months for the U.S. Open, and as all the momentum is dead. So it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. But I really like that change, and I am on board with it. So I can't wait to see what happens with Bethpage next week. All the interest in it, I think, is going to be higher than before, and just how it unfolds. So we'll do an episode about that. Meanwhile, next week, I'm not going to the PGA Championship. Not because I don't like the PGA Championship, but because I've committed to going to the U.S. Senior Women's Open again this year. Went last year for a day. I had a great time. It was one of the happiest golf tournaments I've ever been to. It just felt good to be there, and it was kind of a renaissance moment for me. So I've committed to going to the Senior Women's Open for the foreseeable future, and that means that I'm going to be in Pinehurst, North Carolina, at Pine Needles to watch that all unfold. Play a little bit of golf on the side, too, while I'm in Pinehurst. Have some fun at Pinehurst Brewing Company, all kinds of good things. And we'll be reporting from down there throughout the course of the week. So we'll have Jay Flemma from our team writing our coverage from the PGA Championship. He'll do stuff on the reg for us. And then it'll be a good time covering two really big, interesting events. And then not too long after that, we're going to go to Charleston, South Carolina for the U.S. Women's Open. It's at Country Club of Charleston again. Another event, kind of a meeting to do. I haven't done one in a while since really Paula Creamer won the U.S. Women's Open in 2010. I haven't done a U.S. Women's Open, so I wanted to do that. And then Jay Flemma is going to do the U.S. Open for us at Pebble Beach. I would love to do that. I would love to do that. But my son is graduating from kindergarten that week. There's a ceremony. He's really excited about it. So there's no way on planet Earth I'm missing that. So I'm going to be here for that as well. And then we'll see what happens. Maybe I can kind of weasel my way into going to the Open Championship, but we'll see how that all works out. But so that's our tournament calendar for the future in the next few months, and we'll figure out some things coming as well. But we're getting to the meat of season, and it's really cool to be able to go to some of these things and experience them in person. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Thanks again for listening. Check out GNN Plus if you have some time, thegolfnewsnet.com/GNN-plus. If you have questions about it, you can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, or anything you want to say to me is fine too. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. My DMs are open if you have questions or comments. You can do them in public or private, however you choose. Until next week, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.